Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, and welcome to Table Manners. Today we've got a guest that I've wanted to be on our podcast for so long. I feel that I've got a big affinity with her. She's a Brummie.
You're not a Brummie, but yeah, carry on.
I went to Birmingham University and my mum was a Brummie.
Cool.
I think her constituency is very near where my mum was born. She's quite vocal, not that I am, but she's a force to be reckoned with. She stands up for what she believes in, and she makes me feel proud to be a woman.
We have the Labour MP Jess Phillips on Table Manners today. We are very excited. She has a new book out, Truth to Power. It's her second book, and she's managed to fit us in after a Good Morning Britain episode this morning. We need to go and start those fritters. Because
I don't want the sizzling.
I don't want another Loyal Kana with the latke situation.
No.
But quickly, what are we making today, Mum?
We're making turnip and sweet potato fritters.
With parmesan?
With parmesan. Pecorino, actually.
Deli.
And then serving it with fried eggs on top and some slow roasted tomatoes.
And some pesto that we found in the fridge because we were supposed to do it with like a basil oil and we didn't.
I think that's almost basil oil. And then your brother has broken away from his studying to make an apple cake.
It's the Ottolenghi one from Simple and it's really good. And Alex doesn't speak to anybody. So the fact that you've managed to tell him to make a cake in the morning, it shows how excited we are about having Jess Phillips on.
I told him to make it a little later, so the kitchen smelt delicious.
You keen bean.
Yeah.
I've made something that I don't think's worked, really, but
that's
fine. I'm sure it'll taste fine.
Honestly.
It just may not look beautiful.
That's totally fine.
Right, I'm making you tea.
I'm almost a Brummie.
Oh, are you?
My mum was born in Birmingham, in Bawdsley Green.
Oh, that's literally on the edge of my constituency.
Yeah, I know.
It's not, it's like Peaky Blinders. Yeah. That's Bawdsley Green.
I think it is.
So my granny lived next door to the pub in Peaky Blinders.
So, and also I went to university in Birmingham.
Oh, so you're basically a Brummie.
I really am.
The thing about Brummies is we will basically let anyone be a Brummie. We're very welcoming.
So were you born and brought up there?
Yeah, I live literally three streets from where.
Is
I
your
was
husband
born.
A Brummie?
Yes.
And your kids
born
are Brummies?
And, yeah, born and bred. We're like true bloods. We've not in any way sort of changed the genetics. We've kept everybody truly Brummie.
Stronger or that? Which one do you want? Okay, good. Right, I've got to put this down because my daughter's on this frigging chair.
Jessie moved in with me a month ago or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Feels like 3 months ago.
I was going to say, how's that going?
I mean,
it's okay.
It's fine.
It was not great for what... Last week was not a good week.
My husband decided to fuck off for 2 weeks to go to LA and, you know...
No,
I'm
Jesse,
still
you
resentful.
Need to explain. He was working.
Yeah, he was working, but I mean...
Can I just say, I'm just loving how you talk
but
to
she's
each other.
Got, so she's got a three-year-old and a six-month-old.
Yeah, that's shit.
Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, you'll be out of the fog in about 4 years.
I wish I could present it better than that. You wrote a brilliant Guardian article about don't have a January baby.
Yeah. And it is so true.
Yeah, well, tell everyone.
Why?
About it. It's so brilliant.
So I had my first baby in May, and even though it was horrendous and depressing, when you wake up at 5 a.m, if the sun is up,
I know,
it, you feel much, much better about the world.
You're
and
right.
Also, you can put the baby in a buggy and go for a walk, can't you? You can get out of the house and you can stretch your limbs.
You're so right.
And then I had my second baby on Halloween. And so when he was like, 2 months old, it's the midwinter, and I'd get up in the morning and it would feel as if I had 8 hours stretching out before any light came, and I would just sit in like a groove in my sofa with the baby, just waiting for the light to come up. And then you can't go out in the day, can you? Like, I couldn't go out and just sit in parks with my mates and
faff
feel
all the bloody layers.
All those layers. And
so
then
annoying.
As soon as they poo all the way up to their neck, you've got to undo all the bloody layers. And kids become like a starfish, don't they? Like
yes,
so
they
many
move.
Clothes
totally.
On. And it just was so depressing having a baby. And I found having a baby, my first baby, really hard because I was young and I didn't know what the hell to do. And having your first baby is a massive culture shock. But I actually found my second baby even harder. And it was entirely because it was the winter. And I just couldn't do the things that would protect me.
But don't you think maybe it was because you also had another one?
Maybe.
And you were knackered. Yeah. And because I'm finding at the moment, well, I feel like I've got 2 weeks worth of lions saved up from him being away for 2 weeks. So, but that hasn't really, we haven't like put that into action yet because I seem to be.
Oh, what, the gratis? That's what
exactly.
I was used to
days
say.
And
you've
loos.
Got the gratis.
Days and loo. Lions and loo. So, It was really funny seeing in that article that, you know, your husband being like, it's your turn. You're like, no, I've been up all night. No, it's your turn.
I would just blatantly lie in the morning. I'd be like, I've been up all night. He's like, well, that's funny because I have actually been up all night and you were fast asleep. And my husband was a night shift worker at the time.
Oh, God.
So, that was good because
really?
he was on call often and he would be in our house. And so he would just get up with the baby. I mean, because my second baby, I mix fed him so he could have a bottle in the for that exact reason. And so he would, his hours of being awake were, he was used to being up all night, but then he would have to sleep all day. I would just lie and say, and we'd have this horrible fight every morning, like, it's your turn, it's your turn. And you can't shout at the baby, even though you want to be like, you're such
a
dickhead.
I know.
I mean, the amount of times I wanted to just be like, this baby is such a knob.
I've definitely said, whispered in hushed tones, fuck you, in the middle of the night.
So you can't do that. So you have to just shout at your husband.
Yeah.
And we're just tearing shreds off each other in the middle of the night in the freezing cold. And at the time, you know, we lived in a Victorian house and it was freezing.
Why didn't you leave the heating on?
Because I suppose money is the truth.
What were you doing then? Were you working?
Yeah, I worked.
I
started working at Women's Aid when Danny was about 6 months old. So I was working at a charity for refugees at the time, I think, but I was on maternity leave, but not for very long. But it was just grim in the winter. And it is much harder having two. I remember there's a thing, I'm going to say some really bad science now, where the way women's auditory senses are different to men's. And if there is more than one noise, like, I hate, like, people talking and playing music on the train or something. I find it really, really horrendously distracting.
Like sensory overload, right.
And there was one time my older son, he was 3 and a half when Danny was born, and he was just going, can I have a hot chocolate? Just over and over again, and Danny was screaming, and I'm trying to sort out the bottle or something in the kitchen, and I just fainted with Danny in my arms.
Oh, wow.
I just literally collapsed
just
with the sensory overload of it. I used to faint loads when Danny was little. He was 10 pounds, 10 ounces. And so my body had been through. And then I got sepsis after he was born.
Why?
I had MRSA in the hospital. And so then I got sepsis. So my body had been through like a massive, massive trauma, like a genuine like trauma in the actual clinical sense of the word.
Was it a C-section you had?
No.
Oh,
I had a natural birth.
Did
afterwards.
Did you get MRSA then? then?
When they sewed me up. This is a bit gruesome when we're about to end.
I love it.
When they sewed me up.
And that's an important bit of stitching, really.
Yeah, 36 stitches I think I had.
Oh, my God.
Did you tear? Or
well,
did they
I'd
do
say,
it?
Yeah, Mum.
I tore,
no,
yeah.
She could have had an episiotomy.
Oh, yeah, true.
No, I think I tore because he came out really fast.
And he was huge.
He was huge. And afterwards, the midwife, this Jamaican midwife, said to me, you should never have been allowed to give birth to this baby. So I was like that. Well, it's a bit late now. It's done. But yes, because he was massive. And my placenta, his placenta was 6 pounds.
How dare he do that to you?
Every day I remind him
of
the trauma that he has caused
me. 6 pounds placenta?
I know they don't normally weigh it, but they were like, check it out. This is a massive placenta. I was huge. I couldn't drive after 7 months because I couldn't fit behind the wheel.
Did you eat the placenta?
No, I did not eat the placenta. My mum, all of us were born at home. Apart from me, because I was in some sort of distress because I'm awkward. But all my brothers were born at home. And they used to have to like burn the placenta on a bonfire in the back garden. But no, I did not eat the placenta or have it turned into capsules. But can I just say that has totally broken through. That is cut through because my friend Marcella, who is literally from one of the most working class bits of Birmingham, she had a baby recently.
And she did.
And she, yeah, she had them made into pills.
Yeah.
Just literally like, if they are getting people from the Alan's Croft project to turn placenta into pills, that has had total cut through. I did not do that. I did not eat that. I would have been eating it for weeks.
So, no more placenta, please.
No.
Did you grow up in quite a... I don't know why I'm saying this. I had a baby at home, but like quite a hippie family.
Yeah,
right,
quite
okay.
Hippie. Although like not hippie like posh.
Like
yeah,
holistic.
Often, I don't really know how to describe it, but yeah, they were like hippie. Like they would, we had lentils in jars.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is essentially sort of the only sort of marker that I can think of. And like my parents were part of CND, and my mum was really into like the NCT, and they were long before it was really trendy and middle class. Was it part of some sort of getting vegetables from the market collective?
Oh, amazing.
It sounds like your husband.
Yeah.
That's Jesse's husband was born in a cooperative.
Oh.
A women's cooperative next door to a male cooperative.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they went backwards and forwards, clearly, to be able to have babies.
So my husband was, I'm not going to say cooperative, was basically born in a commune in a big house in Birmingham where loads of people just lived together, and his like first cot was in a tyre.
Oh, wow.
And then they managed to get a council house. But yeah, so it's a bit like that, very hippie-ish, but sort of working class hippie-ish,
yeah,
which is, I'm not sure, a thing that really exists so much anymore, but was definitely a thing back then.
So what were you eating on a kind of school night? Was your mum cooking?
No, my dad did all the cooking because my mum, mum was at work. She went back to work after she'd had me. I was obviously the tipping point. She'd stayed at home for 17 years and was like, this is enough. So my dad used to do the cooking in the evening, and my dad is a brilliant cook, and there was like always about 10 of us to feed every night. So my mum did once apologise to me for feeding me exclusively cheap mince throughout the BSE crisis. She's like, if anyone is going to get this, you are going to get it. We're definitely cruising for Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. So we ate a lot of like curry and dal. And because my dad taught in a part of Birmingham, in Handsworth in Birmingham. And so he, throughout the 60s and 70s, he taught lots of the kids who were settling from the West Indies and from India.
Right.
And so he'd learnt to cook. Two Sikh men had taught him to cook. So my dad could cook amazingly cheaply. Lots of delicious food, like really amazing, delicious curries and pakora and stuff.
Amazing.
That is just essentially vegetables and flour. And it makes an amazing dinner, but it's really cheap if you're feeding a lot of mouths. Mm. But we ate like exact classic things that everybody eats. We ate a lot of shepherd's pie. My mum used to have to make like 3 shepherd's pies. And in my memory, my dad just got one all to himself. I don't know whether I've just totally made that up. Like he was a giant.
So what was your mum doing? What was her job?
At the time, she'd just gone back to work when I was little, and she worked for an organisation called ROSPA. She was a secretary for
an organisation. Prevention of accidents.
Yeah, the accidents. Yeah.
Royal.
I don't know what the O was.
I don't know what the O is. Society for Protection of accidents.
Because it was back in the day when, like, people used to, like, choke on the eyes of teddy bears and things.
Yeah. And it's they still exist.
Yeah. And so when
they
do
risk assessments.
When I was little, we used to have to take part in, like, poster campaigns. So I remember I was the first person ever to have a pair of Fisher Price skates that you could put around your shoes. These plastic ones.
Oh, I remember those.
There's a photo of me, and my brothers have got old fashioned ones, and there's a photo of me and I've got these plastic Fisher Price ones because we were testing the safety of them. There's another one where it's us in a big van and it's about doing up your seatbelt, and it's me and my brothers sat in the cab of an enormous lorry, and it was like the poster for safety. And so we used to just get drafted in because she had a load of kids. Need some kids. I've got one of all ages for any eventuality. I've got a kid that will suit your needs. So, yeah, but when I was little, that's what she did. No, she died when I was 28, 29.
That's young to lose your mum.
Yeah, but she was quite old when she... Well, not by modern standards.
How old was she?
But she was 34 when she had me.
That seems... But it's young now.
It is totally young now. But she'd had a baby 10 years previously, and 11 years previously. So
how old was she when she died then?
She was 61.
That's too young.
Yeah, she died of cancer. But my older brother, my oldest brother, so he was in his 40s, like mid-40s when she died, which I can't help but feel slightly sort of envious of, that is a more reasonable time for you to lose your...
Yeah, he had her longer,
although, to be fair, because I am a gym slip mom myself and had my children young, she knew my kids, whereas my brother's children had only just been born, and my other brother has since gone on to have two children, and she never met them at all.
How old are you?
And so I got that side.
So how old were you when you had your first child?
23.
That is young.
Yeah, but now it's young. It is. But my mum had her first baby when she was 23, and then she was considered old.
But you got pregnant quite early on in your relationship with your now husband.
My husband. Current husband.
It was your only husband.
No, her first husband. Introduce Sam, you say, my first husband.
I was listening to your brilliant interview on Elizabeth Day's How to Fail, and just talking about that and how it was like, 3 weeks in or something?
About 3 weeks in of us actually being together, I found out I was pregnant, but I had known him for a long, long time. Although I don't know what I feel the need to caveat that, as if to say I'm not a horrendously reckless person, but it wouldn't have made any difference whether I knew him actually or not. I would have made the same decision. But we'd been friends for years and years and years before that. I don't really know how. Just where we live, everybody's just friends with everybody else.
It made me laugh when Elizabeth was talking about your husband being Instagrammable.
He's fit.
Is he gorgeous?
He's really fit, because I didn't know what he looked like.
Have you?
And I'm not going to lie, I went on your Instagram, which I'm really baffled why you're not verified. I feel like that's ridiculous that you're not verified.
We need
to get a blue tick sorted.
I don't know. We were having an argument about this in the pub yesterday with my mate Alex, and I was like, she was like, why aren't you verified? I was like, I don't even know what it is.
Oh, we'll sort this with you. Don't worry.
What is verified, darling?
It means you've got the blue tick. You don't have that yet, Mum, but that's okay.
Come on.
But you've got like freaking 18,000 followers. You should be verified. You're going to be the future prime minister. You should be verified. And then I was like, right, what's all the fuss about this husband then? And like, people fucking love him.
And it is a total shock to everybody who has known him for a long time.
Why is he so hot, Jessie? I've not seen a photo.
He's got fit in his old age. It's all
annoying how that happens to men. Fuck them.
He was bang average most of his life and was not well kempt. But as he's got older, I think because we had our kids really young, in the sort of prime years when people become adults, we were like, you know, scruffy and not well kept. But because our children are now older and we have time to like go out and exercise and eat well and do look after ourselves and go and have nice haircuts, while all of our friends are knee deep in nappies now, he has... he takes a cracking photo now.
Yeah, he does. He and really does.
He's had a beard. He's very, very dark skinned and he's completely white British, but you would not know that by looking at him. He looks sort of Turkish and lots of people mistake him for being Pakistani in Birmingham, lots. He's got a very, very black beard and very black hair. And for white people to have completely black hair is quite uncommon. So he, but because it's now trendy to have a beard, my husband has had a beard since the age of 12 and fashion has just come back round and found him again.
I wanted to know though, you're saying, you know, nowadays you get to have your hair done. I've seen you've got a nice manicure.
I have.
I hope this doesn't come across.
She's a book, darling.
No, I get it.
But I would have the nice manicure
would
anyway.
I would every week.
Yeah, every week.
I do think that it's, and I don't want to sound condescending because I can't fucking stand it when they go, you've got two children and you've got this. How do you do it all?
How do you brush your hair?
No, but like, I just feel it must be so full on. Particularly at the moment, you're promoting a book.
Yeah,
you have a family. You have.
You've got your bill. You've got your bill through. Yes,
I got my bill through. Yeah. So yeah, I've got to keep doing that as well. Yeah.
You're scaring Boris.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And I remember you. I watched you in Parliament. And you were talking about. You were talking about the fact that you were just like, this is so ridiculous that Brexit is like, it's stopping us being able to actually do our jobs.
Yeah.
But I just, you seem relatively calm at the moment. And I really appreciate you giving us 2 hours. But your day started today at...
10 past five in the morning.
Because you've already been on Good Morning Britain today.
Yeah, and I went to bed at one.
Why?
That's my own fault. Well, I was at a book signing thing till about 20 past 10. And then I went out hadn't had any dinner. So then I went out for dinner and I was... Because I don't get to...
You don't look tired.
No, you look great.
They put a lot of makeup on you at Good Morning Britain. And they did my hair. But
it's always nice.
I run on empty. I am always much better when I'm empty.
Really?
And then I need to take some time to, like, recharge. But I am very, very good in a sort of crisis situation. I am good at basically having, like, 3 hours sleep and then just getting back onto a treadmill. I'm happier that way. I like working very, very hard. My mind wonders if I don't. And one of the reasons, I suppose, that I ever got involved in politics is because I didn't want to stop after my mum died and allow it to take over my life. And so I just throw myself in. When things are bad, I work hard.
When did you become an MP?
2015.
I'm always... Because I look at you as somebody who... says they've taken drugs, says that you know, it's so open that there's no skeletons in your closet, and that's what's really refreshing. And I think that's brilliant. You know, you don't have to do a Michael Gove and be like, oh, by the way, I did a line back in 84.
God, I wish he'd do another one.
Christ.
I was about to say something that would be almost certainly libelous, I won't say it.
But anyway, so I kind of feel like, you know, people... You resonate, like, I mean, especially for women, you're kind of every woman, and I hope that doesn't sound too gross, but I think you're so relatable,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's really refreshing that you put everything out there, because then you don't need to hide from anything.
It was a protection, to be perfectly honest. It was, I made the decision, so there's I had a horrible experience. It must have been about 6 months before my initial election in 2015, where my brother had a psychotic episode, drug-induced psychosis. And he was like roaming the streets in my constituency. And I must have looked like an absolute lunatic, but I was like having to drive alongside him slowly, trying to get him to get into my car so I could take him to Chapman Road, which is the psychiatric unit, the nearest one. And I've done this a number of times, but I had to stop the car and sort of try and wrestle. And he's like 6'3", my brother, and when somebody's having a psychotic episode, they obviously don't have reason, and he's sort of attacking me in the street. And I did manage to get him in the car eventually. But at that moment, I rang Caroline, who is one of the people who is sort of like worked in politics for years and is my one of my good friends. And I said, I can't do this to my family, because this is just too awful that... if this incident happens in 3 years' time, if I've been elected, you know, that's not fair that my family's life has to be laid bare and this will ultimately be used against me. And so I was like, I'm going to quit, because it's not, they're conscripts, my family. It's not so much my brother, although obviously it is him as well. But at the time, to be perfectly honest, I had very little sympathy. But like my dad having to see like stuff written about his son in the newspaper or stuff like that. And so I was like, I'm going to pack it in. And she just was like, well, you can pack it in, Jess, if you think that that's the case. But don't you think that people like you should be in Parliament? Don't you think that people who can understand, who've been through hardships? And that day, I remember I was in a cinema complex. My kids had obviously gone to see some film and I was sat outside on the phone to her. And I just made the decision to always just be upfront and honest, to protect myself, so that you can't have like a gotcha moment, and just to be honest. And if people don't like it and don't want to vote for you because of it, then you just have to live with that.
Has it ever bitten you in the arse?
Never. I don't know, because I don't read it all. It might well have done.
Well, at least you haven't been touching anybody's leg.
No, I've not groped anyone. No. I've never accidentally groped somebody.
Did and you, not remembered it.
Did you see what Katie Hopkin, that awful woman, right? She wrote, I'd rather be grabbed in the pussy than have a prime minister
who was a pussy, yeah.
She needs help.
I know. I mean,
no. She needs to. She does it. She's like Piers Morgan.
Yeah, she does it for attention.
And she had a big picture with Boris.
Oh yeah.
Did you have Piers on today?
No. He wasn't on today.
Would you have done it if it had been Piers? Yeah.
I probably would have. I've done it before with Piers.
Has he been a dick?
Is he rude?
To be honest, he's not a dick to me, because I stand up to him and he's perfectly. You know, he'll try. But and actually, I don't want to let him off the hook. But I also don't want to make it like, oh, he'll try and have a go at me, and I'm much better than him, so he can't. That's not what I'm saying at all. Is that actually he says it because so that people stand up. And actually, as soon as you stand up to him in face to face,
he's a bully.
He will. Essentially, just go. He will give you respect.
But what happened to him? He used to edit the Daily Mirror, and he was adored by people who worked with him. And he just has turned into a monster.
I mean, I go on Good Morning Britain relatively regularly, and lots of things. And I find that the makeup people are always the people with the best gossip.
Okay, oh, yeah. Yes.
They always know who's like an arsehole and who's not.
And what do they say?
Well, they charming. Say he's really nice.
Yeah, it's pantomime. So
it's pantomime.
It's, yeah, they're like, honestly, he's one of the nicest people. Right. So,
Jess, is Boris one of the nicest people you've met? No, he's not, is he?
Boris is genuinely not one of the nicest people I've met. But to be perfectly fair to him, I've never had a proper conversation with him.
Really?
No, so...
He's frightened of you.
Well,
I think he is.
Well, that's kind. I think it's kind.
Yeah, I think it is kind. I think he wouldn't want to take you on. I mean, I think he likes to be surrounded by people.
I think that Boris versus me, if we were to put it in those terms, is that the trouble for Boris Johnson is that his shtick of being honest and authentic looks tarnished if he stands next to me. And it's very hard for him to... Boris Johnson to claim that I'm the establishment and he's not if we're stood next to each other talking. And so I think that is tricky for him. But I don't know if he's nice or nice. Well, actually, I do know whether he's nice or not. He's not nice, because all of the stuff that is coming out about... one thing I don't like about Boris Johnson is just not honest. Mm. I don't mind if people don't agree with me or have different politics. I absolutely don't mind at all. I just would prefer it if they were just honest about it. And I'm sure we could find a way through. Having said that, I'm sure that me and Boris could sit down in a room together tomorrow and find common ground that might be able to get us through the Brexit thing. But it would mean both of us having to accept that we would lose votes from our base, from the people who would cheerlead for us. And I would be, you know what, I would be willing to try and find a way through. But Boris Johnson is not willing to do anything that will affect his base, because at the moment he just wants to throw red meat to his base in order to help himself.
And what about Corbyn, though? Do you think Corbyn...
Oh, I could do the same with Corbyn, yeah.
What about Corbyn with Boris?
Oh, I'm not sure that they could find any common ground.
They couldn't even sit in the same room, I don't think.
No, I mean, they almost certainly will have to on lots of occasions. But yeah, I'm not sure that they could find a common cause. Not because they couldn't, but because both of them, again, it's this problem of you've got to be seen to be speaking to your base. Whereas I think we've all got to try and speak to the country. Now, some would argue, you could argue that Jeremy Corbyn, in his position, let's say ambiguous, to be kind, ambiguous position over Brexit, is a potentially trying to do that. To be fair, it's not necessarily... It's not working at the moment.
It's just... has it been mental in... The House
I'm
of Commons
put another
at the
on.
Put your fritters on.
Has it been mental in the House of Commons at the moment?
It has.
Now that you're back.
It has. And yesterday when we were doing the domestic abuse bill,
yes,
we were actually debating a piece of legislation and people were standing up and saying their piece and people were intervening on them and saying, I agree with you, but have you thought about this? And then there was there were two women in Parliament who were sat in the debate who had come in on by-elections. And I said, you know, that this is what it used to be like. We used to have bills and we used to debate them and we'd try and improve them and then we'd get them on the statute books and some people would vote against them on perfectly reasonable grounds but they would go through. But it has been mental because since these two women, for example, have been there, it is just urgent questions. It is statements from the Prime Minister. It is question, answer, question, answer. There is absolutely no... reasonable back and forth to a position. That stuff has still been going on in the background around other things, but it has been combative and it has been mental in their two ways.
But
about
do you
that.
Think that Brexit has kind of brought a sense of camaraderie with the women in Parliament?
Yes, that's definitely true. For all of the disunity that it can cause, it has definitely... brought together political parties. So for the first time in my time in Westminster, I watched political leaders from different platforms, from different parties, standing together and saying, you know, we have common cause about this because the country is more important than our political parties. And that felt really, really, really good. But then you go immediately back into the Punch and Judy of it. It's annoying.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Right, let's talk about food. I hear you're a bit of a foodie.
I love it.
So, do you love cooking it?
I actually do love cooking.
Do you have time
I am
to cook?
Just not very good at it.
Okay.
And my husband, I used to be better. My husband is an amazing cook.
Is he?
And so
oh God,
I,
bloody Instagram. Oh, fuck, he's perfect. He's a god.
He builds furniture as
oh
well.
Oh my God, can I marry him? Yeah. Jesus.
He can fix the lights. He can cook. And so my husband really likes cooking and is a brilliant cook. And so I don't cook very often, it has to be said. I've been de-skilled by my husband, but also
but
I can't
cooking.
Ever reach the heights that he can. We could make the exact same thing and his would be amazing.
Okay, so what's his like creme de la creme?
I mean, he's sort of weirdly obsessive. And so... he will have one thing that he practices over and over and over again. until it's perfect. So we had a whole era of fried chicken he was just making the perfect fried chicken burger with, and he, I mean, he went to the, when it was burgers.
What made it perfect?
I, in the end, just like, you know, the, I suppose.
Not having it, probably.
No, well, to be fair, I missed the fried chicken era. But when it was the burger era, I mean, he went to the lengths where he would make his own plastic cheese. He would buy chemicals and make his own plastic cheese.
I love him.
He is like Heston Blumenthal. He's proper, like, we've got a sous vide.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Like, you know.
Do you ever use it?
I use it to make rhubarb vodka, because we've got rhubarb in our garden. So that's the only thing I've ever used the sous vide for.
That's a brilliant use of
it. So I do use the sous vide, but it's really heavy when it's all full of water.
How do you make rhubarb vodka in a sous vide?
You just put your vodka, water, and... like tons of rhubarb, some sugar and some star anise and maybe some orange peeling. And you shove it in the sous vide for like 4 hours and then it's done.
And then, like, do you have to leave it for a bit?
Leave it to cool overnight and then strain it.
Oh, perfect. So you can, like, have the bottle the next day. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got bloody hundreds of bottles. I should have bought
Is it Christmas gift?
It's maybe I will give it out as Christmas gift. Although I'm always like, you should have bought me something. No, he's an amazing, amazing cook. But the things that... like everybody, we have things that we make every week. Like, we have like 6 dinners. When you're cooking for a family, you just get into like the rota of, it's sort of like 10 meals that we eat on a sort of 7-day rolling. So it's not like we always have, although we always have pizza on it was a Monday night, but now because I'm not there on a Monday night, we moved it to Thursday night. And he makes his own dough and everything.
Oh, God. So it's not like a takeaway pizza.
No. We make our own pizzas.
Do the boys like cooking?
Absolutely love it. Both of my sons are amazing cooks. So my son's just started doing his GCSEs, and one of the ones he's doing is food tech.
Oh, nice.
And he's absolutely... both of my children could cook a roast dinner from scratch. And one of them's only 10. And my 10-year-old son is a brilliant, brilliant cook. So he makes amazing chili, makes amazing like chicken and chorizo, sort of paella. They are really, really good cooks, my sons. And youngest son is really brilliant at baking as well, because my mother-in-law, my husband, he gets it from her. She's like a weird hobbyist. Not weird. Diana, if you're listening to this, you're not weird.
Love you, Diana.
And she will like take up a hobby and do it obsessively for 6 months and then move on to the next one. She's brilliant at baking. Like, she should go on the Bake Off, but she
would
swear.
On the Bake Off, didn't you?
Yes, I did go on the Bake Off. And I won it.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that. Sorry.
Not like the big Bake Off, just the celebrity one.
Yeah,
so I only
still...
did one episode. I didn't win, like, the whole thing.
What was your showstopper?
So we had to make a cake.
Did your husband make it?
No, okay. I definitely... My mother-in-law gave me the recipe. And she came round and basically taught me to make it.
Fine.
So I made... you had to make yourself represented in cake. So... but it had to be you, and you had to be made out of cake. You couldn't just be like, put like an icing you on the top. It had to be the structure of you. So I made a big cake that was... cardamom and fennel cake. And it was like a
fennel
big
seeds.
Yeah, fennel seeds, okay. Ground up in the icing.
Nice.
And it was me, like, and then it was me made out of the cake with a big speech bubble that said smash the patriarchy, because it also had to show your hobby. And I was on with other people who were like a comedian and like a runner, and like, you know, although to be fair, Big Nasty was on it with us and he didn't make the showstopper because he didn't turn up for the second day. You know, they have like, you know, really, things that can be really put into like an obvious hobby that has like props.
Yeah.
Whereas like feminism and politicking doesn't really have like a thing that you could obviously put on. So I just put like I made a big speech bubble out of cake.
Did you do like a face?
Yeah.
And what were you made
around cake? Out of fennel cake.
Yes.
And then I covered it in like marzipan and icing, and I did my face, and I stuck some hoop earrings in it.
I love this. How has it affected your boys and your husband with you being kind of more and more in the public eye and being kind of such a leader?
It is sort of weird in that how it doesn't really affect them that much. I mean, it will affect them. It will affect that. It would be wrong to say it doesn't affect them at all. It definitely will. But they are... I don't know if it's a Birmingham thing. And I often put it down to a Birmingham thing, is that we are a sort of... and it's funny because for me to say this, I realise how ridiculous it sounds. We're sort of an understated people. I recognise that I am not cut from that necessary cloth, but like the, you know, there is essentially a sort of shrug about being from Birmingham. And if Birmingham had a tourist tagline, it would be like, come if you want. And so both, my husband is so... I think somebody once described him, it was Blake from The Observer, he said that when he read my first book, my husband came across as the sort of strong dad who sits in the corner and reads the newspaper and looks up every now and again. But when the chips are down, he's the strongest person. It's a bit like that. So they don't really pay any attention and they don't get flapped by it. My older son hates it when people speak to me in the street if he's with me. I just think because he finds it boring, because he's heard that for that person, it's the first time they've had that conversation. For him, it's the 9 millionth.
And what's it usually about?
At the moment, it's about Brexit.
Okay.
Are people ever rude to you in the street?
Never, never, ever. My kids have had incidences where it's been tried to be used, my older son anyway, not my younger son, has been tried to be used against him in the playground by idiots and stuff. But to be fair, he's just like, you don't know the half of it. You think what you read in the newspapers is bad. She can be much worse. Like, and they updated my Wikipedia page, my son and his friends, to say that I eat quavers in the bath. It's like the weirdest trolling ever.
Have you kept it on?
No, they took it off. It took like 10 minutes for it to be like taken off by Wikipedia. I didn't even know it had happened.
Somebody
called him a digital vandal when I talked about it. And then I, because they said they took it off because there was no citation and that he wasn't a reliable source, which he took immense umbrage with. He's like, I live with her. I am a reliable source. Although, having said that, it is not true. I do not eat quavers in the bath.
What is your favourite crisp
to eat in the bath? Yeah, yeah. I don't eat crisps in the bath at all. I like quavers, but for a bath, they would be awful. They wouldn't hold up to the steam. They're for the floaty light.
You're so right. My mum, like, hoards Watsits.
I love
Watsits.
Do you know what? I love a Watsit. I love the cheesy fingers you get.
Orange fingers.
I especially like a packet of Watsits that's been left open all night and has gone stale.
They're slightly soft.
Oh, I love that. That's my favourite. So I will open a packet and leave it in the cupboard and then eat it the next day.
Watsits are fabulous, Jessie.
Table manners, do you think you've got good table manners?
No, not really. I'm always leave the most mess at a restaurant. Like, you know, on a white tablecloth, I'm always the dirtiest.
I don't know if that's...
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing.
My husband is very, very particular about table manners. He doesn't pick me up on it, but he's really funny about my kids. And I actually find that tiny bit tedious. Like, he will pick them up on like sitting up straight, right, and how they hold their knives and forks and eating too quickly. He you know, every day at dinner is a trot through the acceptable table manners. My dad definitely used to do it to me when I was a kid. But there were so many of us around quite a small table that essentially you could get away with anything. I used to like chew up food I didn't like and like spit it into a thing and then like hide it or go and pretend to put it in the bin and things. I definitely didn't have good table manners as a child. But one thing I would say that I am really strict about is that we eat at the table. Every night that I am in my house, we will sit down and sit round the table.
Are they interested how your day has gone, or do they almost want you to escape being an MP at dinner time?
I mean, I think that you've given them a level of empathy that they don't actually have. They're just not interested. if something has happened, the other day, I think it was when my office was broken into, you'd think that would be the leading thing. Are you all right, Mum? Is everything all right? My son Harry was like, I know it's been a bit shit, Mum, but you were trending second on Twitter in the whole world. He said, you were only beaten by Area 51. So which apparently is relevant again. So they don't really. But I do that thing of asking them how their day has been, which is
grunt.
Almost the worst. I mean, it doesn't matter how old your children are. They cannot answer the question, yes. What did you do at school today?
Oh, my God. Okay, fine, because I've been trying to do it to my
don't
daughter
do it. It's a waste
at nursery,
of time.
And I thought maybe it's because she's only three.
No, that will remain the case for the rest of her life.
Jess, I've made turnip and sweet potato fritters.
Excellent.
Well, kind of. And do you want one or two eggs on top?
I'll have two eggs. Only if it's no trouble.
It's no trouble.
I don't know why my brother is actually hidden, because my brother's made you this apple cake.
He loves you so much.
It's an Ottolenghi apple cake because, honestly, and he loves you. So this is kind of what he did when Jay Rayner came here too, where he just made something and hid. But yeah, he will come down soon. And he was like, I hope you've researched her because she's really incredible. And I was like, yeah, I've researched her. God, fuck off. We are asking everyone what they would stockpile for Brexit. This feels quite...
timely.
Yeah, right. So because Brexit is happening. Do you think actually Brexit is happening?
Do you?
I think it probably will happen, yeah. But
no
I don't,
deal?
No, I don't think no deal will happen.
Okay.
I feel quite confident of that. I wouldn't... I haven't stockpiled anything, but where I live, where I've always lived, buying things in bulk is the totally standard practice. So I live in a very multicultural community, mm-hmm. and where I live, nobody buys like olive oil in anything less than like 50 litres. Like people have cans of it in their hand. And rice in enormous sacks, right. And chapati flour in enormous sacks and things. So I definitely am going to be all right down my street for a good while. I don't need to worry. There's going to be a lot of, chickpeas and food. But what I would definitely, stockpile, toilet roll.
Do you think we're
going to
have
that
a
gonna
problem?
Be a situation?
It might be.
Why? Have you heard something?
Jesus!
I haven't heard about loo roll yet.
I haven't heard anything. I don't have like an insider track.
Crikey.
But you know, you don't want to be running out of that.
Jesse.
Okay.
Drinking water.
Why? Is our water going to go to shit?
We have only 6 weeks. I mean, I may be saying bad science again here, but we have only 6 weeks supply at any time of clean. The chemicals that we put in our water to make it clean, they come from Holland, I think. And we can't store them at the rates that we need them. Sorry, I mean, it's not so funny when you ask me that question,
no.
is it?
I think this is really tasty,
Mark. I think it's really
autumnal.
Tasty. Autumnal.
What's the juice worth the squeeze?
I don't know, but I'd like to see whether your husband would be able to perfect a fritter and let us know how to do it, because that took for fucking ever.
Did you flour the outside and did you make them in long in advance and put them in the fridge?
No, they never told me to do that.
Yeah, but that they won't tell you to do that, but... It will always form better if you make it in advance and put it in the fridge.
I'm sorry, Jess, you said you don't cook. You've just given us some fucking
education. But I sit
education.
And watch other people cooking.
Are you going to run for Prime Minister?
I mean...
Not today.
Not today, yeah. But I would consider running, yeah.
When do you think will be the
not
time?
Not you don't get to run to be the Prime Minister unless you're in a weird situation like the one we just had. You run to be the leader of your political party.
When are you going to go for the leader of a political party?
I mean... That's entirely up to the members. I probably wouldn't win. However, I would consider running, definitely, but there has to be a vacancy first.
Because I don't know. I feel like there's a, you know, Corbyn had momentum. I feel like you've got all
the
feminists.
Do you mean literally momentum with a big M and a little M?
But I just, I just feel like something's brewing and I think it's so refreshing and wonderful to have somebody that is so normal.
Oh, that is kind, and I agree with you. I think it would be refreshing, but it has to be about much more. Personality politics is one of the problems, I think, in politics at the moment. Mm. So it has to be about, as well as somebody with sincerity and trust and integrity, those are all incredibly...
But you have all that.
I don't doubt that I have all that. And that's what people saw in Corbyn, certainly in the beginning. But there has to be a broad plan for the future as well. So I'd say that needs some work.
Okay, fine.
Because it has
Fair
to
enough.
Be about people's lives, not just because people will trust me, because... It's very flattering and I'm very pleased that people feel that way about me, but it would be wrong for that to be the only platform to stand to be the leader of a political party on, because you should stand to be the leader of a political party because you think that you can change people's lives for the better. Now, I do think that, but it has to have slightly more meat on those bones. So a work in progress is what I would say.
It is a work in progress.
Yes, a work in progress.
And when you say it's a work in progress, does that mean that you have... people
not
around
really,
you.
No.
Okay, so you haven't got the team yet.
No. I don't. It's not like there isn't like a sort of
it's
defined
not like West
plan.
Wing or
no.
Like, okay. Or yeah.
Nothing Scandal, in politics yeah. is like West Wing or Scandal.
Okay, got it. Do you like Scandal?
I literally love it.
Me too.
I love it.
Very, very favourite.
I mean, it went a little bit off piste when she was kidnapped. And you thought she'd gone to bloody like Iran, and she was actually in a box.
Yeah. I mean, it went off piste on many different occasions. Yeah. However, I loved it. Salma, who works in my office in Birmingham. Whenever she does anything, she'll text me and just say hashtag handled.
Last Supper. Mm-hmm. Starter, main, pud, drink, go.
Okay. Starter, I would have something that was like crab, like fish. Because mm-hmm. I don't really
well,
cook
I love,
fish.
I like crab.
Yeah, I don't really know how to cook fish very well. So...
like a crab cake?
Yeah, crab cakes. Oh yeah, my, like
I love soft shell crabs. I made can eat the
delicious,
whole thing.
Absolutely delicious. So I'd have crab, some sort of crab starter. And then for the main, again, I'm going to go fish, which I find really odd because I don't really like fish that much. But my absolute comfort food... And my husband, funnily enough, because it has been a bad week, he said he would make this for me at the weekend. Aww. And I didn't even ask him. He was just like, I'm going to make it. He makes like this Goan fish curry.
Oh, it's lovely.
Ooh, yes.
It's so good. And he it used to be when we first had Harry and we had almost no money and we lived on very, very sort of basic rations, that he would occasionally make this as like the treat. Like he would go and buy like cod loins and make this curry. And it is just, it tastes to me, it tastes like my marriage to my husband.
Aww.
To
fishy.
Me. Fishy. Slightly fishy and not consistent. it is absolutely, and it's like, so because of the coconut and everything, it's like so
warming.
Comforting,
yeah.
Like soupy and delicious.
I'm gonna get that case.
Something so nice about soup, isn't there? Soup is so... Yeah. Comforting. Mm. And so I would have that. For pudding, I don't really eat a lot of pudding, but if I could have anything and it was there was no object, I would have my mum.
Sorry,
right?
Do you want to fucking say, do a bit louder? Jesus.
Well, your brother was supposed to come and help. He's not doing
sorry.
Anything.
It's so charming.
really? I think it's rude.
I would have my mum's treacle tart. She used to make just a sort of really basic treacle tart. She would make the pastry from scratch, which I never do that anymore. Life's too short to make pastry from scratch.
Agree.
But she would make pastry from scratch, and there would always be a little bit of it left in the fridge for ages, which was always the view that we were going to make jam tarts that never got made, and then it just went hard and got thrown away. She used to make, yes, treacle tart with a proper, like, where you twist the pastry on the top. So I would have that as my pudding. I would really like some of this. This looks amazing, this cake.
You said when you were talking about your last supper that it's been a really shit week.
Yeah.
I thought it seemed quite positive in the House of Commons yesterday. But
I haven't seen my husband since then. But over the weekend, after the sort of death threats and people trying to siege the office, as you put it, it's just been really tiring. But it has been very positive this week. And going around and talking about the book and telling people to speak up has been brilliant.
This is your second book. Mm-hmm. And how long did it take you to write? Because I don't understand when you had time.
7 weeks it took.
That's very quick.
Yeah, but not. I mean, also, I didn't do it like all day or anything. I just did it in the evenings, and I'm stuck in Parliament a lot for a long lot of hours. So, like, most people will go home from work at like 7.
Yeah.
But I will get stuck in Parliament with no meetings or anything to go to, waiting for a vote for hours and hours on end. That's when I wrote it, and also just in the evenings at home and at the weekends.
But that's when I'd be watching Scandal.
I mean, I can write whilst watching Scandal. I can manage both of those things.
So what can people expect?
So the book is trying to help people feel both inspired but also have the tools to stand up for themselves and stand up against what is essentially a rising tide of...
horribleness.
Yeah, dissent and despondency. Lots of people feel more activated than they've ever felt before in their lives at the moment, and people know what words like proroguing mean and understand about amendments and Congress and different inquiries. People are much more clued in, but at the same time they are also very at risk of shutting themselves off from the world because it's just too much. And people write to me all the time and say, I just want to do something, but I don't know what that something is. And so, you know, instead of responding to the 1,000 people who've said that to me via email individually, I thought I'd write it down in a book about how people can help. And the book charts the story of 6 people who have spoken truth to power one way or another, and tells sort of each of the sort of stages of doing it and the things that will happen and how you'll feel. Through their stories and through different things that I have done to try and help create a situation where people feel like they can get their voices heard and that nobody matters any more than anybody else, regardless of where they are in the hierarchy, and that we can try and just make the world like slightly more palatable. I don't think that, you know, my book on its own is going to make the world slightly more palatable, but it'll do a little bit.
So what... one of those case studies within the 6 stories. Mm-hmm. Who, like, can you give an example?
Yeah, so Zelda Perkins is... The sort of book opens with the story of Zelda Perkins, who was a 24-year-old PA to Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And long before anyone was standing up to him, this was back in the early 90s, it charts the story of how she literally walked up to him and challenged him on the fact that he had attempted to rape her colleague, so her colleague had claimed, I have to say, for legal reasons. Yeah. And, you know, what the sort of fallout of 20 years of being silenced for her, of speaking truth to power. But her bit is about how do you find the courage to do it, to do something like that. And the idea, trying to get rid of the idea that people are...
it's a cat.
Oh, it's the cat. Yeah, hello, cat. Trying to get rid of the idea that people are somehow magical and the only kind of people who do this are a certain sort of person. That she was a 24-year-old PA.
Did you speak to all these people?
Oh, yeah. I met with them all and interviewed them all. And
so they're all a bit Erin Brockovich.
Yeah. Yes. Except, in fact, I cite Erin Brockovich. I cite my mum as being like Erin Brockovich in the book because my mum sued... a huge pharmaceutical company in like 1981 who had made a drug that made my nan's eyes and lots of other women. It was a medication for angina, which it turned out they didn't have, but they don't do enough research into women's presenting heart disease. And it made my nan's tears dry up, so she stopped her being able to see. And so my mum sued them when she was pregnant with me. And for millions and millions of pounds. In fact, this sapphire here, this ring which I had remodelled, was given to her by when in the will of one of the women she got a payout for.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so my mum was like Erin Brockovich.
Can I just ask you one thing? Do you have a karaoke song on a karaoke night?
Turn Back Time by Cher.
Oh! Oh!
And where would you turn that time back to?
The 90s. Just basically when like 1997, 1998, when I was wild and I already had Tom, so I don't have to lose him because he was already in my life. Like politics was like on an even keel. Like things were just getting better, weren't they? Things were just like on the up and everyone was a bit positive.
I know.
But if you weren't in politics, would you go back to working...
at Women's Aid, yeah. I mean, I don't know whether I ever will go back to working in Women's Aid, but yeah, that I would... I miss it. It was really good fun.
Thank you so much for coming round and being such a wonderful guest.
You're
and good
welcome.
Luck with the new book.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like you don't need any luck, but yeah, wishing you all the best with everything. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
Mum, I loved Jess Phillips. I want her to be my friend.
I just think everyone would want her to be a friend. She just is
a real woman's woman. She was such great fun. She has that wonderful combination of being serious, sensitive, but also great fun.
I feel like I should do a little bit more with my day now.
Thank you for listening. The music you've heard on Table Manners is by Peter Duffy and Pete Fraser. Table Manners is produced by Alice Williams.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.